Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Wattier.
And I'm Tommy Welling, and you're listening to the Fasting for Life podcast.
This podcast is about using fasting as a tool to regain your health, achieve ultimate wellness, and live the life you truly deserve.
Each episode is a short conversation on a single topic with immediate actionable steps. We cover everything from fat loss and health and wellness to the science of lifestyle design.
We started Fasting for Life because of how fasting has transformed our lives, and we hope to share the tools that we have learned along the way. Hey everyone, welcome to the Fasting for Life podcast. My name is Dr. Scott Wattier, and I'm here as always with my good friend and colleague Tommy Welling. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey Scott, how are you?
Doing fantastic, my friend. Good to see you today. Excited for today's conversation. We're going to be getting into a couple of the pillars that we truly believe are what allows folks to adopt a healthy fasting lifestyle, prevent disease, reverse blood sugar issues, lose the weight, and finally, for once and for all, feel good and excited about the plan, and that fasting is an integral part of getting those long-term results. So today we're going to talk a little bit about sleep and women, and do they need more sleep than men, and the effects of sleep restriction. And then we're going to talk a little bit about exercise. Should we do it in the morning, in the afternoon? Does it really matter? Then we're going to talk about fasting and our food choices and how those all kind of intertwine. As we like to say with every episode, we want you to walk away with one or two things that you can do now to put into your fasting life, into your day-to-day, starting today. And that's hopefully the goal with this conversation today. So Tommy, before we hop in, I want to give a shout out to the new listeners. If you're new to the podcast and you can see us, welcome. We're going to talk about changes and some updates and the show format and things that we're going to be leveling up to continue to grow and make a bigger impact on this obesity and diabetes epidemic that we are up against. So we'll go over that in just a minute. But welcome to the show. If you want to know more about us, Tommy Welling, Mr. Tommy Welling, the handsome bearded gentleman over there, and my story, you can head back to episode one, give it a listen, give you some insight into our journey, how fasting transformed our lives, and why we do what we do week in and week out. OGs, shout out to you as well. You guys continue to show us the support. You're on the journey with us. We appreciate you giving the opportunity, and we're just so grateful that we are on this fasting journey with you, as well as we continue to spread the good news that you have a choice when it comes to your health and it comes to your weight journey. And we know that fasting is so much more than that. If you're on episode 220, whatever this is now, then you know that's what we truly believe, and that is the lifestyle that we truly live. So, Tommy, I want to give a shout out to one of the listeners before we hop into today's episode. So, BDG122913, Tommy, right?
Yeah. BDG said, I've loved the podcast for 2 years, then finally joined a challenge in January, and it completely transformed my understanding, which is so cool. I had such a great experience. I added coaching, and I'm enjoying the process too. The podcast is well done, accessible, making it easy to get started, and we provide a lot of resources to support the journey as well. And this is my favorite part. These guys really care that their audience finds success. I could not agree with you more, obviously. But
I don't know who you are, BDG, but you were part of our challenge. I don't know who you were, but...
And in coaching.
Let us know, right? Yeah, like, right? Who are you?
Yeah, but that's...
I have some ideas.
Yeah, that's the best part, because we really do care about everyone's success. I mean, that's literally why we do this week in, week out for the last 4 years. So absolutely thrilled for you, and just so happy that you're finding success right now.
Yep, and I'll give one other mention here as well. Mm-hmm. You're going to notice some changes. You know, we partnered with NutriSense a while back. We have our partnerships with LMNT. We recommend certain, you know, products and supplements very minimally. We want to really allow the body to heal and function and lose the weight in a healthy way through the tried and true art of fasting. And we've got some long-term listeners now. We've been doing this for a few years. And we've got a lot of stuff that we want to do. We've got an app we want to build. We've got diabetes reversal programs we want to create. We want coaching to be more accessible to everybody. We want, you know, done DIY type courses. You know, we have these things that we've been working on as we build our team and continue to, ultimately grow that impact. But you're going to notice some changes too, right? So we had someone mention our first review mentioning some of the NutriSense ad spots. Mm-hmm. And I want you guys to, and I want to know, I want you to know why we're doing it. So you are going to notice that we're going to be partnering with some of the brands and the things that we truly believe in. You know, there's the opportunity out there where we could, with the reach of our podcast now, we could just willy-nilly literally have, you know, Capital One ads and all these different types of things. Yeah. But like, one of the biggest questions we get is, what do you guys do? Like, what do you eat? How do you sit down at the dinner table? What are the supplements you use? What are the brands that you use? Do you do cold plunging? Yes. Do you do sauna? Mm-hmm. Yes. Do you use Whoop? Do you use Aura Ring? What about Pavlok, like the discipline retrainer? Like, right. There's all these, this vast expanse of stuff out there. And we're going to be partnering with some of those things that we truly believe in and use in our day-to-day lives. Because if you are much like BDG122913, if you have been, I have an idea of who you are, but if you've been a part of our infrastructure and inside of our, you know, our coaching community or inside of one of our challenges, one of the biggest questions we get is, well, what would you do? Like, what do you guys do? What products do you use? So there is going to be some of that, and we are very sensitive to it. And that might not be for some of you, but after 240 episodes, right, each and every week, and all the resources that we have on the website, we've got some big plans and some big things we want to do. So I want you just to understand where we're coming from when you experience some of these changes. And it is ultimately with the intention and the goal in mind to reach more people, to build more lives, and to help and encourage as many folks as we can that you can prevent and or reverse disease and lose the weight once and for all with fasting. And that's ultimately what we've done, and that's ultimately what we want to teach you to do as well. So Tommy, let's get into today's conversation. And today's conversation is going to be, this article came across our purview, and it kind of hit me because this is something that I've personally struggled with, right? My sleep journey has been documented throughout all the episodes. I wear a Whoop and I torture myself with it for that reason. And I'm still working on trying to figure out to get consistent sleep. My wife and I are now in a season where she's ready to finally like wean the little guy off of breastfeeding. And our other two are great sleepers. And it's like, she's like, we want our mornings back and we want consistency back. And we're not looking for perfection, but sleep for me has been a main driver of insulin resistance and disease. And this article came across, and it's out of the Diabetes Care Journal of January 2024. So it's chronic insufficient sleep in women impairs insulin sensitivity independent of adiposity changes, results of a randomized controlled trial. So what that means is women who get less sleep, and we'll talk about specifics here in a minute, in 6 weeks impaired their insulin sensitivity, which is not good, which means insulin resistance, without changes in visceral fat or the scale, meaning without weight gain, pretty much, or weight loss.
Yeah, so hard to tell that those changes are actually happening in real time, too.
Correct. So we're going to answer the question, do women really need more sleep? Research says yes. And then we're going to tie one of our other pillars, right, into this, where we talk about the effectiveness of exercise. And if we're going to truly build health, then we need to look at our fasting. We need to look at our food choices. We need to look at our sleep and stress. And then we also need to look at this thing called exercise. And a lot of people that come into our ecosystem be like, yeah, I'm getting up at 5 a.m. I'm part of the boot camp club. I'm doing my 6 a.m. burn, classes 5 days a week.
Yeah, especially at the beginning of the year now.
Correct. Especially January, February, March, right?
Yeah, we still have the holdover for the New Year's resolutions.
Right. And by no means speaking from a glass house, right? Not throwing stones because I'm still tweaking my stuff, doing strength metrics, adding more walking in, the sauna, plunging, working on the visceral adiposity in that last now less than 6 pounds, thankfully closer to 5 pounds of visceral fat that I've got. Nice. And that last 10 to 12 pounds of body fat overall that I want to get into, the body composition portion of my weight loss and health journey. Mm-hmm. But this thing of exercise and whether or not we should be doing it in the morning, in the evening, or most importantly, should we be sacrificing our sleep, especially as women, to be getting up in the morning to go and getting it done? And so that's what we're going to unpack here, Tommy. And I think the best place to start would be would be answering the question, do women need more sleep? And the research shows that yes, especially as we traverse into perimenopause, into menopause, that only 49%, less than half of the women in this country, get less than the recommended 7 hours of sleep per night.
Yeah. You know, we kind of grow up hearing that magical number, 8 hours, but we can also rest against the line that like everybody's different, right? Like everybody needs a different amount of sleep. But the thing about that is that when we look at long-term health outcomes and actual metrics that look under the hood, we can see time after time after time in the studies where less sleep equals suboptimal biomarkers from blood work and not necessarily blood sugar or not necessarily what's happening on the scale immediately, but after we'll go into some of the details from this study in particular, we can see as some of the leading measures like actual insulin sensitivity and insulin resistance tests that even short-term bouts of an hour and a half less than optimal sleep doesn't have to be like, I'm only getting 4 hours of sleep a night. It doesn't.
Yeah, we're not talking Navy SEAL training.
Yeah, it's not Navy SEALs, right? But just an hour and a half less than an optimal amount. So going down to about 6.5 hours, we almost immediately start to see decrease in insulin sensitivity. And so that's a leading measure. That's the tip of the iceberg for what happens over the coming months to years, right?
Yeah, for sure. And the reality is that the science does show, you know, average adult needs that 7 hour mark, right? And to feel refreshed, and that sleep, women do need a little bit more sleep, especially from moving into that menopausal time. And some of the other statistics are pretty staggering. Women 18 or older are 33% more likely to wake up every night. You know, 38, you know, the women of 49% compared to 38% of the men in the 25 to 44 age group get less than 7 hours of sleep. Women also are woken every night to care for others more often than men. In our household, it's pretty even, right? Because of the amount of kids we have. But in a lot of households, that is not the case.
We have two kids. My wife is awakened most nights of the week, for sure.
Yep.
And she can feel it every single day.
Yep. And right now, I've got the two bigs. I'm being woken up by them because mom is tending to the little guy. Mm-hmm. Right, so I get the little taps on the arm when mom's in the room. So it's much more common, especially the statistics show with women. And then there's the men are way more likely to attribute their sleep issues to anxiety and depression and mood changes and those types of things. Which, if we're going to look at the sleep circadian rhythm blood sugar balance, we're going to talk about that and how that is related. Mm-hmm. So when we look at this study, the study was really interesting, and I love what they looked at because they were looking at, like you said, Tommy alluded to, the mild sleep restriction, right? And what it did to the markers. So fasting insulin, glucose tolerance, increased risk of cardiometabolic disease. And this was done in a group of women that had metabolic syndrome. So we wanted to look at a 6 week crossover study, right, with that 1.5 hour delta. And we were looking at plasma glucose, insulin levels, HOMA IR, as well as total area under the curve for glucose and insulin, and really looking at what is this small shift, right, this hour and a half shift from average sleep to moderately sleep deprived, and what that did to that main metric, that insulin sensitivity.
Yeah. And so even looking at that over 6 weeks to see what happened, and, you know, because they also went through a lot of the other studies that have already been done on this subject. Some of them in, you know, healthy men, some of them in not at risk populations, but most of them didn't go out a full 6 weeks. So a lot of times they were within 3 weeks, even if they did an hour and a half or maybe even more of sleep deprivation. So potentially looking for some larger outcome measures. But the interesting thing was this study actually found more dramatic results as far as a negative impact on insulin sensitivity. And it's speculated that it was because it was more of a applicable chronic kind of time frame where you're going multiple weeks out past the 1 month mark. And so even though it wasn't huge sleep deprivation, it was substantial enough to actually move the needle over a prolonged time period, right?
Yeah, so it worsened HOMA IR, and it was greater in this. Now, this is one of the limitations. There was only 11 women that were in the postmenopausal state, but the increase in HOMA IR was greater across the board and fasting insulin, right? So both metrics got worse, but it was greater. The HOMA IR, which is the industry standard for insulin resistance, right, was greater in postmenopausal women.
Yeah.
And in this 6 weeks, there was no apparent effect on fasting glucose or the OGG test, right? And again, it didn't really significantly affect body fat or visceral fat, which I'm not surprised because it was only 6 weeks long.
Yeah, yeah, not exactly enough time to move those needles.
Right. But what we do know, and Tommy, you had already unpacked some of the other studies that were out there showing why this study was kind of standing and filling in the gap of the data. The previously mentioned studies of mild sleep restriction, the evidence suggests that typically about 4 hours a night, right, that more like sleep deprivation category, we call it the Navy SEAL training group, right, can increase hunger, energy intake, and body weight, which we obviously know can affect insulin sensitivity. But the decrease in insulin sensitivity following sleep restriction is potentially twofold because it in itself can affect those how your body reacts from a physiological standpoint. So you have what they said here to kind of land the plane of my thoughts is direct effects and indirect effects. So less than 7 hours sleep per night, we have a physiological stress that takes place, and we have an increased lipolysis from higher levels of catecholamines. And the indirect effect is you've got a greater hunger and caloric intake. And then ultimately, in the long term, you get increased body fat, which all leads to a decrease in insulin sensitivity, which is ultimately what we don't want if we're trying to prevent metabolic syndrome and cardiometabolic issues.
Yeah, all those things also lead to a downward spiral of prediabetes and diabetic and blood sugar related conditions and issues and physiology in the body. And, you know, what we can also see is the fact that also bridges that gap between the whole a calorie is just a calorie is just a calorie. It might not be. If I'm not getting sufficient sleep, my body can't handle each one of those calories. The environment that I'm bringing those calories into the following day is very different from if I had sufficient sleep and an optimal physiological state. So it's very different that what's actually going to happen to our fuel as we bring it into the body, depending on how rested or level of sleep deprivation that we have.
Yeah. So the last couple of pieces here we want to talk about is our fasting, and our exercise, right? Mm-hmm. So women, yes, you need more sleep. Typically you are the group that is more sleep disturbed. And we've done tons of episodes on sleep and sleep deprivation and similar type studies. Never one in women that have metabolic syndrome. And then Tommy, your huge point there, which was this should be a proactive part of the focusing on sleep, a proactive part of rather than here's your pill or here's your lifestyle change coming from a system that is not designed to teach lifestyle change.
Right.
Most doctors don't have any nutritional consultation whatsoever, and you definitely don't want to be following the American Diabetes Association. This is not medical advice, but you don't want to be following their food pyramid, in our opinion. So, you know, this should be an integral part of prevention and reversal of type 2 diabetes and or other cardiometabolic issues that are on that insulin, insulin kind of cascade that happens, right? Where we know insulin resistance shows up in the muscle and in the liver and in the body, visceral adiposity, waist circumference, et cetera, long symptomatology long before it shows up on a fasting glucose or a fasting blood sugar test or an A1C, right?
Well, and then the long-term effects for women are different too, because then you have your estrogen production going down.
Yes, huge part.
Right? which seems to very clearly in the research show a protective effect of yes. this sleep deprivation, this suboptimal physiology that kind of develops with even a small sleep deprivation.
Yep.
So as estrogen levels keep declining, then we have less of a protective effect of that. So that's why these effects that we see in this study affect women much more, as they get into menopause years.
Yeah, and that's a huge part. I forgot to. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because we had talked about that in, you know, when we were prepping for the show, for the episode. Is that as you transition, you know, the reproductive organs decrease their production, right? So that estrogen production comes down, like you said, the protective effect.
Mm-hmm.
But then your adrenals, you still make estrogen, right? But your adrenals now take over the production of that in women. So chronic stress, disturbed sleep, those are two areas that we need to be focusing on, right? Like strategically putting intention into those areas if we're going to help you lose the weight, feel good, energy levels, reverse chronic conditions, all et cetera. We can't leave those root causes alone and expect everything else to get better.
Yeah.
And that's why I want to transition into the conversation today to that exercise and that fasting component, where we hear often, Dr. Mindy Pels, who's been in the fasting space for a while. She's one of the, we say Dr. Fung, et cetera, one of the giants that we stand on their shoulders to continue to move this movement forward.
Yeah.
She will actually say, hang up your running shoes as you get into menopause, as you transition into menopause. You want to be doing more, you can look at some of the previous episodes we've done on high intensity interval training, more weightlifting, more muscle building type activities, walking, all of that. Mm-hmm. But one of the things we commonly hear when people come into our ecosystem and during one of our challenges, we do a whole day on three drivers of insulin resistance that are not food, right? Stress, sleep, right? Are two of those main players.
Mm-hmm.
And exercise in certain cases, because it will raise short-term cortisol and put additional stress on that adrenal HPA axis. So the question here is, when we have people come in, they say, oh man, yeah, I'm getting up at 5 a.m. to go do my boot camp 4 days a week.
Yeah.
Or, I'm wired and tired at night, and, working out is like something that helps me calm down. Now, I am not going to disagree that exercise is important. We're not saying that. And that exercise has an incredible effect on mental health. And it's a stress reliever for some women, but from a mental standpoint, right? For me, I don't get a lot of joy out of working out. It's not a stress reliever for me. It's something I do because I know the benefit,
mm-hmm.
right? But for my wife, she just feels better and more vibrant when she gets her workout in, right? So the question is, in this article that we're going to mention here, Tommy, and the we have one big takeaway, right, in regards to sleep, is that this article was showing efficacy of morning versus afternoon aerobic exercise training on reduced metabolic syndrome components, a randomized controlled trial. So they were looking at women that had metabolic syndrome. Oh, I misspoke earlier. The previous article that we were mentioning about insufficient sleep was not in women that had metabolic syndrome. The exercise study that we're talking about now is in women that have metabolic syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking at AM workouts and PM workouts. And interestingly enough, the outcomes were pretty even, but there was one big discernible difference in some of those afternoon numbers.
Yeah, you could definitely get a little bit of a better efficiency in insulin sensitivity and blood pressure improvements if you were doing your workouts in the morning. So if you had a choice, AM workouts were a little bit more effective than PM workouts, a little bit. But
yep.
The really big takeaway for me was that difference was far less than the difference in having good sleep. So being able to prioritize and protect the amount and the quality of your sleep far outweighed the benefits of that morning workout over the
getting
afternoon
out,
workout.
Getting up early and burning the midnight oil and sacrificing that extra hour.
I've done it.
Oh, we're recording on a Wednesday. I did it this morning.
Mm.
Gym, men's group, both happened in the morning. Mm-hmm. Didn't have another window to get the exercise in, so I did it. I'm also not a woman, right? So I don't have this extra level of complexity that I need to think about, but sleep was a main driver of insulin resistance for me. Mm-hmm. So to quote the article, it said, somewhat more efficient at reducing cardiometabolic risk factors, i.e. systolic blood pressure and insulin sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
That somewhat, if you look at the data, like it, that is not enough for me to be like, man, I got to get up at 5 a.m. 4 days a week at the sacrifice of my sleep score and my consistent sleep need or sleep debt, if you're familiar with tracking your sleep metrics.
Yeah. Like if you could work that in to your schedule on a consistent basis without sacrificing sleep, then awesome.
Yeah, maybe getting to bed earlier. It. Hey, honey, you got the kids tonight. I'm going to bed early. I'm starting my bedtime routine while you're putting them down. Right. Like however you need to shift that, we got to protect that sleep window is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it would be great to do it like that. But at the same time, there's nothing wrong with getting that exercise session in the afternoon, especially if it meant that you could get great sleep, you know, sufficient duration and good quality and still get in your exercise the following day, then perfect. So I'm almost like thinking about it like a prioritization rather than just a simple like yes, no, you know, on, off, black, white kind of mentality. So more of a prioritization. So getting in the workout, if it was ideal, if it was, you know, first thing in the morning, because you're more likely to do it, you like the way it makes you feel. Also, there might be a slight benefit to that as well. That's great. But it's worth prioritizing the sleep and getting your exercise in the afternoon if you can consistently do that and get the huge benefit of your protected sleep.
Yep, absolutely. And the last piece is this idea or this thing that we hear often is OMAD dinner. So if we're going to protect sleep on the front end, one of those things, right, that disturbs it is the early workout. Got to get it in. Totally understand, but that means you got to get to bed earlier. You got to have a healthier sleep routine, right? So you have to work on those sleep. Some of the stats we shared earlier were from Sleep Foundation about women, the gender gap, women needing physiologically more sleep than men. I grew up in a sleep when you're dead type mentality in a household, right? So yeah, Tommy, too. I know you did as well, right?
Sure did.
So when we're looking at this protecting sleep on both ends, you can head to the show notes and grab the sleep guide. If you just scroll down, there's a link. It's a free resource that we created on how to increase your sleep hygiene. And then the blueprint to fasting for fat loss is the next thing we're going to recommend, because this last piece, and that's another 20-page PDF. We'll zoom it into your inbox. You can go grab that as well. It's really going to hone in on this fasting piece. And one of the first resources we created was this one meal a day fasting, OMAD, right? Mm-hmm. And OMAD has become much more mainstream and much more common. But the reality is that a lot of people will pick dinner. We have a mini masterclass. It comes with some videos. You can get that too if you want it, or if you need a refresher. What we realized, though, is that most people were picking this OMAD dinner because it was easier. It fit into their day-to-day life. It's one of the principles we teach. Like, we don't want your diet to be your life. We want your life to be your fasting plan, right? Mm. We want you to enjoy it. It should be fun. It should be sustainable, right? What's the best diet? What's the best weight loss strategy? The one you can stick to. So you need to figure out what works for you. But this idea that OMAD dinner or like that later meal is a good thing. It can be, but it can also, if we're in the spirit of what we're talking about today, protecting our sleep and our sleep score, then it needs to be addressed.
Yeah, because the larger our dinner meal, the larger our late night meal is, the later it is and the larger it is, the less conducive to really good sleep that it is. And so that can be unfortunate because a dinner OMAD can easily turn into a dinner window or a multiple hour window. It can be harder to close that window than if you had one meal a day at a different time during the day. It's much easier to stop a breakfast or stop a lunch or even an early dinner versus a later dinner. Mm-hmm. And then just if the window stays open and then more consumption happens during that time and the time is ticking on as it does, this makes it harder to get to sleep. But also, even if you do get to sleep quickly, which can also be helped by some of the increased insulin response that actually happens later on in the day too, that leads to lethargy that can then, you know, put us into feeling sleepy. The problem is that, generally speaking, our sleep score, our recovery score, however it is that if you track these things, typically your efficiency of that sleep has gone way down. And so usually you'll feel that too. If you're in tune with this, you can feel the difference when you wake up, even if the amount of time was the same. You won't necessarily feel the same. You won't feel as rested. And that compounds. That's similar to just reducing the overall amount of sleep that you get, which we just talked about all the negative effects of that, right?
Yeah. And so it's not that the food is later or it's bad if you eat late, right? It's mm-hmm. the effect on insulin. Our insulin sensitivity is not as great in the later in the day. Same meal, 8 a.m., 8 p.m., you're going to have up to a 30% greater insulin response in the evening, right? And we know, I know, my dad always used to say, when I was growing up, nothing great ever happens after midnight.
Right, yeah.
So get your butt home, right? Well, I'm going to say nothing great really ever happens physiologically when it comes to our insulin response after 8 p.m.
Oh, for sure.
So, right? So it's like, you get to 10 p.m., a little glass of wine, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe a little drinky poo. Maybe a little...
Some crunchy.
Little bag of salty sweet.
Yeah.
Maybe a little popcorn. You know, maybe a little... So, and that's just me, you know. My habit was how I was raised also. You'd have dinner and then you'd have a snack. You'd have some popcorn, mm-hmm. some ice cream, something before bed, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a Pop-Tart, maybe a baked good. You know, just who knows? The opportunities are endless.
Unfortunately,
so,
yes.
Yeah, we want to apply that, hey, nothing good happens after midnight. Well, really, if we're going to protect our sleep, our food choices, our alcohol, that can all disrupt it. Eating later can disrupt it. Mm-hmm. Anyone ever, you know, eating a big carby meal and then go to bed, you sleep hot, right?
Yeah.
When you get into your REM sleep, your body's
heart
temperature...
Racing.
Your heart racing? Yeah, your body temperature regulation goes away. That's why you wake up, especially between that 1 to 3 p.m., a.m., excuse me. Mm-hmm. So just some things to consider if we're going to be putting sleep at the forefront here. This is one of the pillars that we teach. We live. I'm practicing it. I'm working on it as we speak in real time.
Work in
progress. Tommy and I are in a Whoop group. We're like, oh, dude, you crushed it. Oh, man, you're suffering today. What'd you do? Right? So we really want to be focusing on this as a fundamental foundational piece to our fasting lifestyle. So if you're looking for more guidance, Tommy, you can grab the blueprint to fasting for fat loss. You can grab the sleep guide, right, to increase and improve your sleep hygiene. But as we wrap up today, Tommy, let's get a final thought and then we'll call it a day.
Yeah, I think a final thought for me would be just I'm gonna bring it to your fasting window, because it's my favorite way to apply what we talked about today would be try out a new meal or a new window. So if you've been doing OMAD for a while, try an earlier OMAD this week, you know, either an early dinner or maybe a lunch OMAD. Try that on this week and see how that fits, because you might feel like you're waking up a little bit differently versus that later OMAD dinner. And if you've been using a window, like let's say an 18-6 or a 20 and with a four-hour eating window, move that to an earlier time. My favorite go-to would be somewhere around like a 12:30 to about 4 o'clock eating window. And this can work well for, you know, maintaining results on the scale or maybe a little earlier in your fat loss journey. This can work well, but the cool thing is that can feel very different from a 3 or a 4 p.m. kind of opening up that eating window, which then, you know, goes to maybe 7, 8 p.m. And then, you know, inhibitions come down as the time ticks on. So it can be harder and harder to close that window the later that it gets. So try that on, see how you feel and see how you sleep, and see what the scale does too, because you might see new results after you try that a few times.
Yep. Love it. So head to the show notes, click the links, grab the resources. You have questions, feel free to reach out. info@thefastingforlife.com. We try to get to everybody's questions. We're working on that infrastructure, building it out.
Oh, yeah.
There are going to be some changes to the show format. We want to potentially start doing some interviews later this year.
Yes.
And really just building out the support for adopting a fasting lifestyle. It's become much more mainstream, much more common. There are some pitfalls. Fasting's easy, but sometimes it's not simple to adhere to. So we just want to give you a shout out again to BDG122913 and Vivi. Message received. Glad that you got so much value and we've been so helpful on your weight loss journey.
Yeah.
And we will continue to listen to feedback. I just wanted everyone to know where our attention's coming from as we continue to build out this fasting for life, this fasting lifestyle machine, as we take on the weight loss, obesity, and diabetes epidemic that we are up against here in this country and really, to be honest, worldwide. Yeah. So, as you join us on this mission and on this adaptation of fasting into your lifestyle, we're grateful for you to be listening to today's episode. You know where to find us each and every week. Tommy, appreciate the conversation. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. Bye. So, you've heard today's episode, and you may be wondering, where do I start? Head on over to thefastingforlife.com. And sign up for our newsletter, where you'll receive fasting tips and strategies to maximize results and fit fasting into your day-to-day life.
While you're there, download your free Fast Start Guide to get started today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Fasting for Life.